south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. You know, I always recommend, if you have a car here in Latin America, to get minimum third-party liability insurance coverage. You'd be nuts not to, and for a lot of reasons. First of all, if you do it right and bypass the gringo brokers that'll try to sell you a policy because they know you don't speak Spanish, you can be sure they'll pad it and oversell it because they get a bigger commission that way. I'm mentioning that for all you gringos and expats who end up on the gringo tourist trailer close to it. Again, if you bypass the broker and go directly to the insurance office, then you'll need someone who speaks Spanish. You can usually get third-party liability coverage, including an all-inclusive sort of AAA coverage, you know, if you get a flat tire, battery dies, lost your key, even run out of gas, they'll be there in 10 or 15 minutes, and that's part of the coverage. All that for around $150 to $200 a year. Now, a lot of gringos and expats think that the main reason to have liability coverage is in case you hit somebody or they hit you, the damage to their car is covered. Well, that's true, all right. But considering probably half or more of the cars here in Latin America aren't even roadworthy. They're just poorly maintained or never maintained pieces of junk. If you have a fender bender, it'll probably be with one of those guys. Then comes the question, how do you fix a car that's already got 4,600 dents in it? So that's not the primary reason you want to have liability coverage. The main reason is if you hit someone and you hurt them and they go to the hospital, even if it's not your fault, depending how bad the injuries are to the other guy, the cops just might take you down to the local station and throw you in jail. And if it happens on a weekend or a holiday, you might just be sitting out a couple days in a very scummy jail cell. Of course, being a gringo, you'll have the gringo advantage in jail too. Contrary to those Hollywood movies that show gringos getting extorted, tortured, and bungholed in jail, well, you'll find that pretty much only happens in, you ready for this? Mexican jails, and possibly in El Salvador. Because, as you heard me mention before, once you get south of the border, that is, south of the Mexican border, man, your gringo advantage is alive and well because there's just not that many gringos around. Oddly enough, you're kind of an admired, welcomed guest. Yep, even in jail, most people will want to be your friend. I know what you're thinking. Not that kind of friend. Anyway, as opposed to Mexico, where there's at least 1.5 million gringos who are retired and or have property there. Many who are what you might call ugly Americans who've worn out their welcome. So to Mexicans, gringos are so common, there are no great shakes. We're just taller, whiter, English-speaking people with a lot more money than they have. Which is why so many gringos and expats in Mexico get ensnared in cons, scams, gringo pricing, and gouging. Anyway, as mentioned, if you don't have insurance and you put someone in the hospital, even if it's their fault, if it's serious, you'll go to jail. Until one, your lawyer comes down and bails you out. Or two, which is why you want to have insurance, because the insurance van will show up at the scene probably within 10 minutes to a half an hour, and they'll write a check for the dough to bail you out. That's part of your insurance coverage. Meaning, unless you've actually killed someone in a car accident, you're not going to jail. So you really have to know about the legal system if you get in a car accident and you hurt somebody. It's not you're innocent until proven guilty. They take you down to the police station and hold you, whether you're a gringo, Latino, Chinese, whatever. And you have to wonder, why do they do that? Why is that so common? Well, it's like this. Because there are so many drivers without 2 centavos to rub together. If they didn't hold these guys till a court hearing, they'd just disappear. Meaning they'd probably never show up for the hearing or court date. Why? Because they've got nothing to lose if they don't show up. I mean, really, look at the average Latino's assets. If the car's a piece of junk, and like I said, more than half the cars are, that means they live in a crap neighborhood, no money in the bank, so there's no account to garnish or lock up, which is why, in all Latin countries, if you get in an accident and hurt someone, they'll bring you down to the station. If you can't put up the bail, they'll put you in a cell till your hearing, which could be the next day or a couple of days if it's the weekend. And even though it might only be slightly less comfortable than a backpacker hotel, you wouldn't want that. Which is why you want to have a good, trusted lawyer around, one that'll answer your phone or your text messages in a reasonable amount of time, or someone from his office gets back to you soon anyway. And you want to have that minimum liability car insurance, because then they'll come and bail you out. That's part of the policy. So then you might ask, what would the bail amount be if you put someone in a coma? Well, I've asked around, and in most situations, it's no more than $1,000, often much less, like $100 or so. By the way, insurance policies, like policies up in the States, will have a maximum limit that they will pay for bail. In fact, I'm looking at a policy right now. It's in Spanish, of course, and it says they'll pay up to $3,500 for bail money. By the way, the Spanish word for bail is fianza, F-I-A-N-Z-A, fianza. Now, while I was reviewing my own policy, which, by the way, I pay around $150 a year for, I noticed one of those other crazy things that can only happen here in Latin America. Under the column called Beneficios Adicionales, which means added benefits, they include in the insurance policy, and you're not going to believe this, third-party accident coverage, of course, and medical coverage, etc., for the driver, even if his driver's license has expired. In my particular policy, it says we'll cover a driver whose license is expired, but not if it's expired more than 6 months. So if you get in a crash and your license is expired 6 months in one day, they won't cover the accident. And you know, when I first read this the other day, I had to look at it two or three times because I'm thinking, this must be fantasy land. Because up in the States, if you're driving and get in an accident and your license is expired 1 minute beyond the given date, not only will your insurance company deny the claim, the cops will be taking your car and they'll take you to jail too. So again, living down here in Latin America, surprising, even crazy things happen every day. Oh, and speaking of Mexico, which I really like for a quick vacation package deal to one of the resort areas, but that's about it. Speaking of driving a car in Mexico, sure, every Latin country has cops who are on the take. Most of them are corrupt. Occasionally, when they pull you over, they'll be expecting a bribe of sorts, especially if you're a gringo. For example, if you're in Honduras, Salvador, or even Bolivia, you might get nicked for $20 at a road stop, or even asked for gas money. Problem is, you see, in Mexico, they're not going to ask you for $20. It'll be $50, $100, even $200. So it's true throughout Latin America, the cops are on the take. But I've found pretty much in only two countries in Latin America have the cops up the ante to Franklin's. Oh, and do note, if you're driving around through Latin America with U.S. plates on your car, man, you're a target and you're going to get nicked a lot by the cops. And of course, there are lots of cars with U.S. plates in Mexico because people are coming back and forth all the time. To have a car with U.S. plates in Mexico is like having a dollar sign tattooed on your forehead. Which is why if you're driving around, especially in Mexico, you want to have Mexican plates. Then they'll leave you alone. Same thing goes for Belize, Costa Rica, Guatemala, Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua. When you're driving around in their country and you've got their plates on your car, you might never get nicked for a bribe. Oh, and speaking of Mexico, here's reason 2,476 why I don't recommend that place for gringos and expats, except, like I said, for a nice package tour vacation. Did you know, and I'm sure you didn't, that this July, Mexico's having its presidential election. And as it turns out, the front runner by far is former Mexican City Mayor Andrés Manuel López Obrador. So he's the guy with the money behind him. He's pegged to win. Nobody's doubting that. But here's what you didn't know. The guy who's backing him, putting up all the money, is a Monterrey tycoon named Alfonso Romo. So big deal, you say. Anyone running for president in any country is going to need some big money behind him, right? And of course, the big money boys are going to want favors once you get in there. Correct? So anyway, this big money guy, Alfonso Romero, has already been pegged after the election to be the new chief of staff for the new president. So here's what you didn't know. This guy who's going to be chief of staff was chairman and CEO of a company called Seminis, an agricultural seed producer that, get this, was bought up for $1.5 billion in cash plus a performance bonus of $125 million by everybody's favorite poisonous snake from hell, Monsanto. So that means the new president is going to have for his chief of staff a guy that's massively beholden to Monsanto. Of course, they don't want anything from the new administration, right? Which brings me to a conversation I had just recently at one of the local coffee shops. I was sitting around with a bunch of Latin American entrepreneurs, 40 and 50-something guys with businesses, most of them who inherited them from their rich daddies. And one of the topics on the table was competition. As one guy said, I don't know what my business is going to look like in 5 or 10 years, but I can tell you this, the Chinese are coming in and they're taking over not only Latin American businesses, but the world. the guy who said that was in the textile business. He said the Chinese are starting to crowd him out. He says, I don't get it. They come over, they don't speak a word of Spanish, and soon enough they end up owning a bunch of businesses. First, he said they go after the maquila and textile industries. Then, like in Belize, where they don't have textile industries, they go after something else, like mini marts, grocery stores, hotel chains, the orchid and flower business. Then this guy started talking about protectionism. Sound familiar? And his buddies all agreed with him. Remember, all this is going down in Spanish. Then one of the guys said, you know, the only way we can compete with the Chinese is to freeze them out. Do like the big cement and beer companies do. You know, hold up their containers at the aduana, nitpick them to death, tell them they have to redo their paperwork, etc. Stall them with injunctions, tie them up in court, make them do environmental impact studies. Then he winked at me and said, that we know, you foreigners are the only ones who have to comply with. Then one of the guys who was in the plastic container business says, yeah, we can play that game. We've all got friends and relatives in high places. Then he spoke about how a dozen containers of machinery for a Chinese extrusion plant were stuck in the aduana on the Pacific coast for over a year and a half. Because, see, that's how things have been done for so many years here in Latin America. The big, rich Latin families with a lot to lose, like sugar, tobacco, hotels, restaurant chains, cement factories, movie theaters, all have political buddies, even family members in government, to help them protect their monopolies. That's how they remain the top families and the top monopolies. But like the guy said, it's not business as usual anymore. The old way of stifling competition is coming to an end. The Chinese got the big muscle in the dough, and they're starting to spread that money around to the politically connected too. Then he said, I don't know what we're going to do. Those guys are wickedly smart. Then he went into a little story about his brother-in-law, who owned part of a construction company in Panama that partnered up with a Chinese firm. He said the Chinese developers come in with state-backed dough. They offer creative finance packages to politicians for road work projects, port and harbor improvements, stuff that costs millions. For example, he says if Panama needs a new port and some dredging and the whole thing costs $50 million, an amount that the country doesn't have, but the project definitely needs to get done, it would be a dream for a politician to fulfill a promise with someone else's money. He'd be a hero, get rich in the process, the project would get done, and future generations would have to pay. Where have I heard that before? So say the estimate's $50 million and the government just can't swing it. Politicians have been promising it for years, but nothing's happening. Well, guess who's done their homework? The Chinese will come in and offer to build it for, let's say, $30 million. It's a bid that no local Latin developers or construction companies can meet. It's just too low. Well, here's how it's done. The Chinese developer will build it, take a loss on the project, and his Chinese partners and the Chinese government will make up the rest. But part of the deal is that your new Chinese friends get a significant portion of the income of the port for 50, even 75 years. So the Chinese are doing deals like that in nearly every third world country. What they lose in profits up front, they make up in long-term revenue by having a piece of the action that lasts for decades. And even in the beginning, they rarely lose because their own government will kick in a bonus, which is how Chinese businesses and the Chinese government end up owning properties in third world countries. They become long-term share and leaseholders. That's how they worm their way into the economies of sovereign nations, which is kind of ironic because the word sovereign means independent, autonomous, and free from outside pressures. Yeah, right. In fact, as all these guys agreed, the common Latino on the street just doesn't care. In fact, they don't even like what they call Chinos at all. But they'll work for them, of course. Talk about stereotyping. It doesn't matter if you're Japanese, Korean, Indonesian, Filipino. They're all Chinos to Latin Americans. In fact, I've seen it myself with my own Latin friends. One will see a Latin woman with a Chinese guy, especially if she's attractive. Then come the chismes. Latins, both men and women, will start in with the inside joke, saying she's in it for the money and he's in it for more Western-looking kids. The word chisme is kind of like an inside joke. Anyway, like these guys are saying, you'll never see a Chinese girl with a Latin guy. It's always the other way around, a Chinese guy with a Latin girl. And so far as I can see, they're correct. And the guy's family generally has money. At least, that's what my Latino friends always tell me. And she'll be above average looking, middle or lower middle class, meaning he saved her from a life of riding the chicken bus. Oh, and by the way, these young Chinese guys will always have Latina wives and girlfriends, never indigenous wives and girlfriends. As one of my Latin buddies pointed out, they've got their own Latino racial prejudices going too. Just as Latin guys prefer blonde, light-skinned, blue-eyed gringas, which is pretty much the impossible dream for them, Chinese guys prefer light-skinned Latinas, not short, dark, indigenous females. Turns out just like Latino men, they're overly concerned about the next generation, what their kids are going to look like. Talk about classist, racist, and being color-conscious. You can bitch and moan about prejudices up in the first world, but until you've been down in Latin America and had your boots on the ground for a while, you ain't seen nothing yet. Now, don't get the impression there are lots of Chinese around. There certainly aren't. But they own a disproportionate share of businesses. You've heard me mention in past shows that there are only a few Latin countries where you see Chinese people on a regular basis. You know, Brazil's biggest trading partner is China. Yet the Brazilian Latinos on the street just don't care. Almost none of them speak Chinese or Mandarin, nor do they care to. And young students at Brazil's universities who should see the future always prefer to take Spanish and English as their preferred second or third languages, and almost none of them show any interest in the Chinese culture or Chinese languages at all, nor do they show any interest at all in wanting to travel and see China. Brazilians, if given the chance, would much rather see Spain, Nueva York, or Miami than the Great Wall. They just don't have any interest in that. But where were we? Oh, yeah. Then the wealthy Latin guy with the brother who has the construction company in Panama said, you know, unless you're in the textile or clothing business in most of Latin America, you almost never run into Chinese people on a daily basis, unless you're in Panama, Brazil, Argentina, or Colombia. Then he said, if you go to the airport lounges in those countries, you'll find they're starting to open a variety of provincial Chinese restaurant kiosks. And he said they're nothing like your standard neighborhood Chinese restaurant. You know, China has so many different regional cuisines, and till recently anyway, the Chinese businessman coming in couldn't find any decent Chinese food. Not to their liking, anyway. And almost nothing in the way of cuisine from their own regions or provinces. And you heard me talk about that on previous shows, that Chinese restaurants here in Latin America just basically suck. They're just so generic and bland. Don't get me wrong, there's thousands of them, probably tens of thousands of them. 99% of them are just bastardized Latin/Chinese junk food greasy spoon joints. But what this guy was saying is that if you go to the international airports in Panama, Brazil, Argentina, and Colombia, you're starting to see a variety of provincial Chinese restaurant kiosks with a lot of exotic dishes most Latinos have never seen or tried before. He says they're also popping up in the big cities in those countries around business centers and luxury hotels. Obviously, there's enough Chinese people arriving to support the demand. Then he said, being in the clothing and textile business, he's gone to a lot of trade shows in big Latin cities. He says you see a lot of Chinese people these days manning the sales booths. He said he's seen a lot of funky Chinese plastic carryout containers, which can only mean some of the display booth guys have brought food in doggy bags from their own provinces back in China. I guess that'd be a sweet and sour wonton journey of 5,000 miles or so, huh? Talk about long-distance cravings. But you know, Latins do the same thing. You see them at airports flying back to the States with doggy bags, filled with local treats they can't get back in the States. Oh, and earlier I mentioned that Brazil's number one trading partner is China. I mentioned that first because Brazil's so huge. But guess what? China is also Chile and Peru's biggest trading partner. That means China's got a huge amount of leverage in South America. So is that good or bad? Well, not if you're Chinese, but if you're living in South America or considering setting up your plan B there, I don't think I'd be too happy about that. But that's just me. So as a gringo expat living in Latin America or an expat putting together your plan B from up there in Seattle or Cleveland, should you be worried? Well, in most of these Chinese Latin American state-to-state development projects, as in the previous examples, where the Chinese step in with an extremely low bid on a government project, just remember the Chinese are in it for the long run. They don't just build stuff and leave. Those contracts have strings, if not tentacles. Besides the fact that the deal includes the Chinese taking future concessions, most often those contracts have other binding guarantees, like built-in deals for Chinese contractors and machinery suppliers. Often hundreds of Chinese manual laborers are included in the deal. Now, you might think that's kind of a dirty, weaselly way to get their long-term hooks into a third-world government, but you know what? That's exactly what the U.S. government's been doing with foreign aid for 100 years now. Did you ever read Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins? It's the same blueprint, only slightly different, where the U.S. government makes huge, unrepayable loans to third world countries to build bridges, dams, infrastructure projects, using all U.S. machinery and technology. Then, after a while, the country defaults on those loans. The U.S. kindly steps in and loans them more with certain contingencies. But you knew that already, right? Now, of course, the Chinese governments aren't setting Latin or third world countries up for default. They don't want to be in that business. They're very patient and happy to sign a deal that involves future concessions. Now, my Latin buddies, who all went to school here in Latin America, have tunnel vision and don't read much. They say, Johnny, why are the Chinese so successful? They can't speak the language. They look different. We don't even like them. Now, my Latin buddies know nothing of the Confucian work ethic, which is kind of like the Protestant work ethic that the U.S. founding fathers had. But alas, my college-educated Latin buddies don't know what the Protestant work ethic is either. You kind of wonder what they study, huh? Then I tell my Latin business buddies that the Chinese all have to learn English at school. It's a requirement. They're forced to do it from grade school on. Whereas Latin Americans, practically all of which would rather live in the U.S., rarely learn English. Though the average first world guy from Cleveland or Seattle should talk. We don't learn Chinese at school or Spanish either, unless, of course, we picked it up from the gardener. So, bottom line, the Chinese have the numbers, the education, the force of will, etc. So, they probably will take over the world. Oh, and I just read the other day that some 300,000 Chinese people are going to school at U.S. universities right now. So, what's that tell you? Oh, and the Chinese that have emigrated don't much like their government at all, and they have little or no use for safety net welfare states either. And you know, it sounds like a cliche, but they stick together. Like one big family, they help each other out, they give each other loans. You know the story, you've heard it a million times. Might be a cliche, but cliches are all based in fact. So for the Chinese, family's number one. Nothing wrong with that. Too bad we can't say that for the majority of people living up in the States. Oh, but they've got their virtual families, right? You know, iPhones, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Judging by the way you see first world families acting at the dinner table, if they even eat dinner together these days, their devices are their family. All right, here's a question that pops up regularly. Are Latin-based airlines safe to fly? All right, before we dive, wrong choice of words, into that sticky subject, like to mention, for all you Plan Bers out there thinking of coming down to my July 2018 Expat Insider Seminar, I've picked the dates. Write this down. It'll start Saturday, July 7th, and go through the evening of Thursday, July 12th. Though I always recommend you add a few days to the front end or back end of the trip so you can fit in one or both of the famous John Galt pre- and post-seminar tours. All right, then, to get on the early bird list and receive the info, details, and mailings before everyone else, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and put seminar in the subject box. So back to that all-important question, are Latin American airlines safe to fly on? And what about maintenance, especially knowing that the word maintenance is often not in the Latin vocabulary? Oh, and what about the food? Well, as good luck would have it, almost all of the major Latin American airlines, for example, Mexicana, Copa, and Avianca, have all partnered up with big first world airlines like Delta, Lufthansa, Iberia, and KLM. And that's why many times if you don't take a direct flight, you'll have a layover in Panama or Mexico City, and you'll switch from a U.S.-based airline to a Latin American carrier like Copa or Avianca. Now, you have to know when a Latin-based airline partners up with a first-world airline, the standards are first-world all the way. Besides, there's the fact that any national airline that goes beyond its country's borders and lands at an international airport has to comply with the regular maintenance and inspection procedures as outlined by the FAA and the European International Airline Authorities. By the way, all international airports have the same regs. So the airports, their equipment, and their air traffic controllers come under heavy scrutiny, too. Now, the same thing is not true, though, if you're talking about a national airline that does not go beyond a country's borders. That is, unless they make stops at the local country's international airports, then they have to follow those regs, too. That means if you're flying from some small podunk airport to another small airport that's not certified for international flights, well, you're kind of on your own. And the truth is, there are small plane crashes throughout Latin America pretty much on a regular basis, but we're talking about small prop planes. It's extremely rare to hear about a passenger jet plane crashing. The fact is, statistically, you have no more chance of crashing in a Latin American passenger jet than you do in a passenger jet in any other country. However, you hear about small prop planes crashing all the time. often because they're overloaded with fat Latino government types and cocaine, which is no big loss. I keep away from prop planes myself. So, modern international air travel here in Latin America is as safe as it is anywhere else. Though it is true, in the past, before the year 2000, the millennium, man, that seems like such a short time ago, but it was, what, 18 years now? Anyway, before the year 2000, there was a history of established carriers like Delta and Lufthansa often sending their oldest aircraft to their Latin affiliates. In fact, a Latin American political scientist named Moises Naim once famously called that phenomena American Airlines Syndrome. I'm not kidding. Back then, 20 years ago or more, that symbolized how little United States and international carriers cared about the Latin American airways. Hey, where do you think all the old broken-down U.S. school buses go? To Latin America, of course. Then they get a facelift, a lot of chrome, a lot of neon, and voila, you have a chicken bus. So yes, before the millennia, I flew in a lot of those ancient aircraft myself. It's just not like that anymore, so don't worry. Though back then, before 9/11, I remember flying in an airline in Brazil, and it was kind of like a chicken bus with wings. Lots of turbulence, kids crying, samba music, the plane bobbing up and down like a cork, and the stewardesses, that's what they called them back then, before the age of PC, kind of sweaty and even a bit terrified. Oh, and speaking of stewardesses, / flight attendants, I know a few Latina flight attendants and a few ladies that tried out for the job. And here's what they had to say. As you might expect, they have to be nice, friendly, calm, unflappable, and smiley. And how about this? Something they can only get away with in Latin America, I guess. They must be thin or what they call Columbia curvy. But not too curvy because those airplane aisles are narrow. And all of them said that the better-looking girls were selected, with a few gay guys thrown in for good measure. What that says is there's definitely a lot of lag time in the Equal Opportunity Hiring Department, and there are no women's rights or gender organizations protesting. It's that lag time effect, you know, it pervades everything down here. Which reminds me, about 3 weeks ago I was at a big Latin international airport, and I saw a Latin girl wearing a t-shirt, and I took a picture of it. I'm sure, as usual, she didn't speak English and had no idea what it meant. Here's what it said. It asked this question, where does virgin olive oil come from? Answer, ugly olives. Then under that, in smaller parentheses, it said, how about extra virgin olive oil? Answer, ugly old olives. You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.